San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live from Kearny Mesa at the legendary KFMB studios in San Diego, coming to you with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but also Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, out to the desert. And now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a marathon runner. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He's a core member of Strategic Trust Advisors Roundtable. He is a family office expert and advisor to many high-net-worth families. His name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great. Happy Easter.
Thank you. Happy Easter.
You got any chocolate eggs?
No, I got some hard-boiled eggs, though. So, and happy Passover also to our friends out there celebrating that. Hey, quick shout-out to my brother, Dom, and his Fran, and Dominic, and JP. They're out here visiting from Illinois and having a blast. It was a beautiful day here in Mission Bay. And of course, they're having Mama's famous meatballs for Easter.
Sounds good.
And a little vino, too. So, anyway.
And here we are working.
Here we are working.
When we could have been at your mother's house.
Well, that's okay. I need to push away from the table.
Okay.
Putting some weight on here. But what did you think of the Final Four, Richard? How's your pool going?
I picked Gonzaga, so.
Oh, really?
Okay. Gone.
Gonzaga.
My wife Mary has, if Louisville wins it all, my wife Mary will come in second. Now, Mary did get $10 back on the first day because he went 16-0 on the first day.
Really?
Yeah, wow. Only the second person in the history of the 22 years in my pool that went 16-0 on a day.
Wow.
But she didn't do well because she had number one seed going a long way, and Louisville still in there, which she has to win it all, which that'll get her in second place if that happens.
Hey, congrats to San Diego State. They made an admirable appearance, don't you think?
Yes and no.
Hey, they got, what, they had two wins, right?
And then they had one win.
Then
they made history.
What was that?
By being the first team to ever let a number 15 or 16 seed make it to the Sweet 16. Yeah, it's the first time anybody's ever lost to a 15 or 16 in the second round.
All right, well.
So that part's not good.
Well, they got there.
But they got there and they won a game. And then they made history.
So anything,
not the kind of history you want to make, but they did.
What's new in the running world with you and Mary and everything? Anything new that we should be knowing?
Mary's training for her first half marathon on May the 5th. So we won't have much news until then.
Wow. So it's just train.
Just sort of get ready for it because you got to ramp the mileage up.
Excellent.
So she's ramping it up, but soon she'll be ramping it back down.
Excellent. Well, shall we get into tonight's show? What do you say?
Yeah, I think it's a cool topic because funny story to lead into this. I was speaking at the Secret Knock event here in San Diego, which is a personal development seminar where all the heavy hitters in the personal development world get out. I have no idea why they would let me get in front of all these people and speak, but they did. And the gentleman who spoke after me is a gentleman by the name of Jim Amos. And he was recently inducted. I guess this would be in 2012, last year. He was inducted into the IFA.
Inducted, not indicted, right?
Inducted into the IFA. The IFA stands for the International Franchise Association. So the IFA Hall of Fame. And he's the genius behind Planet Smoothie, but before that, I think he was UPS store and mailboxes, et cetera. So he has a long and distinguished career in terms of growing franchises and brands.
Well, that's a great lead-in because
that's our subject matter of the evening, franchising. And why is that, Joe? Who do we have here?
Well, it's a big part of our economy, and our guests will tell us about it. But this gentleman here, he's got a degree in electrical engineering. He's an MBA. He's a certified financial planner. He's been in the franchise business over 15 years. And I happen to know him through Unico, an Italian-American organization, and his name is Frank Caparino. So, Frank, good evening and welcome.
Well, thank you very much for welcoming me, and I'm going to say Buona Pasqua since we have three paisani here. The audience is going to pick up my accent. It's a little on the east side of San Diego, like in Hoboken, New Jersey,
where
the other famous Frank.
Yes, you're from back east, and I don't mean La Mesa.
No, I just came from back east. My mom lives in El Cajon, and I went out there for Easter dinner. Oh, wait. No, you mean further east than El Cajon. Okay.
Further east. But, Frank, you've been here many. How many years have you been in San Diego?
26 years.
So.
But, you know, that's part of your roots, the Eastern accent. Oh, really.
Sure. When everybody comes from the East Coast and says, where's the best Italian restaurant? I say, you left it there.
But anyway, so Frank, franchising, big part of our economy in a big industry. Can you give us some numbers before we get into the show a little
well,
bit?
Well, you were on one of my webinars last week, and I had those numbers exactly. And I apologize, I didn't have the amount of employees in front of me because Richard asked me earlier. But I will say one quote that you hear all the time and you read about, 50 cents of every dollar we spend every day has to do with franchising. And we're spending it every day from the CVS store to the McDonald's that you know. But and most people think 70% of franchising is all retail and food, but it's a lot of other franchises that we're spending on we don't know about. So, it's a big part of our economy. So
Jim Amos said it contributes $2.3 trillion to the economy.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. That's amazing.
That's what he told me.
So 50% of what we spend is at a franchise of some
walk
sort.
In any mall, and you can see that. Count the stores.
You own franchises before, right, Frank?
Yes, I had 8 Cold Stone Creameries for 15 years. So, and that, I just sold the last one last July.
Interesting. So so now you're more of a consultant type, you would say? Or?
Right. I work with Franchoice, and what I do is I consult on franchise. I consult with a candidate to see which one they're going to buy. There's 3,000. There's a myriad of franchises, 3,000 of them. How are we going to choose between 3,000? We cannot.
Mm-hmm.
So I sit down with a candidate over a 5-hour period, and I try to find their wants and their needs. And they might be coming out of a profession where they already have a professional job, or they're retiring early from that job, or they were laid off, the worst of the scenario, and they want to continue working. And maybe they want to be an absentee owner, a semi-absentee, or they want to be hands-on, like in a retail environment. So that's what the consultancy is about. My service is free because I get paid by the franchisor. So they all they have to do is invest their time, and it's definitely worth it.
Is 3,000 a number that's increasing or decreasing?
Oh, it's increasing. It's really some books say 3,500 and more. So it's because everybody sees that I get a lot of requests. People call me and say, help me start my franchise. I have 2 locations. How do you do it? And, you know, now they have to make the move from being an entrepreneur, maybe hands-on, to being an executive. And they got to be ready to spend about, $100,000 to go to franchise lawyers and file in every state. So sometimes that's not easy. So I think people want to be franchises once they have a successful business.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ray Kroc, I guess, pretty much was one of the original innovators, right, with franchising, right. Wouldn't you say? And his book is Grinding It Out, which I read in 1984 when the Padres were on the verge of going to their first World Series.
Well, no, they went to the World Series.
I mean, but I read it in January.
I
read it. He died in January.
Right, died in January.
And I read the book right after that. And, of course, by that May, the Padres were in the World Series. And I was after the Cubs Series. I was a dish rag. I couldn't even watch the World Series. I was just so emotionally overcome because the team really spunk when he took him over, as you know.
Wow.
But the book is all about his experience with McDonald's. Perfect. and how he started and whatnot.
But Frank, what's the oldest known franchise in the U.S.?
Well, that was a question that I put out on a webinar that Joe was on last week. Joe got the second answer. What did Ray Kroc do? This is tangential to the issue, Richard.
Yeah, I was just curious.
And he said that Ray Kroc was a milkshake salesman and the equipment before he bought out the McDonald's brothers. He answered that question correctly. The oldest known one is Singer, 1863. And it was kind of a hybrid where they sold in the store and they also set up other sites. But I also say when I put that out, when I speak, I say, people, I'll give you a free book if you would do that, if you would answer that question. And I say there's a second answer, too. You could say it's the Catholic Church, you know. So since it started 2,000 years ago and money's always been going back to Rome. So, but they didn't sign any contracts or anything.
By Singer, you mean the sewing machine company?
Yes, the sewing machine.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, how interesting.
I never knew they were franchised.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
That's interesting, yeah, because my mom had she may still have a Singer sewing machine.
Right. Yeah.
She's like, hey, Mom, what kind of sewing machine do you got? Call the show it.
She's listening.
Now, Frank, you're with Franchoice, right, which is a consultancy online operation that will help people find the proper franchise.
Yeah, if you actually went to franchoice.com and look under the consultants tab, there's 50 people on one of them. They come out of Eaton Prairie, Minnesota. They only have 5 people in the office. And besides the CEO, one of the persons, Andrew Horton, his whole job is to vet companies. And they vet about, we have at least 70 franchises in our portfolio. So when I sit down with a candidate, I'm looking at what they want, how many employees they want, how many hours they want to spend, and how much income they want, and what kind of family life. Mm-hmm. And from that, we start to blend and, first of all, pick the right category. We got five different categories. There's home-based franchises where somebody maybe wants to be an employee by themselves. There's home-based with outbound sales. How maybe they like selling and they want to increase and they want to build their territory up to the biggest they can. There's light retail, meaning 450,000 gross sales and below, and then there's large retail that's 450,000 and above. And the fifth category is usually the high net worth person that wants to buy the master franchise. He wants to buy Southern California or all New Jersey, mm-hmm. and he then sells as if he was a franchisor himself.
Hmm.
Do you think we should tell the audience the difference when I say franchisee and franchisor?
Well, yeah, sure. I was going to ask you about, actually I have two questions. That was going to be my first one, then I have a second one. So yeah, if we could back up and explain who is the franchisee and who is the franchisor.
Okay, the franchisor are the companies like McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's, and the person who runs and buys the location and pays whatever the franchise fee is in the build-out, that's the franchisee.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great model if you think about it from the franchisor point of view. He develops his brand across the states, if not the whole world, on somebody else's money and assets, and he mm-hmm. takes a piece of their gross revenue.
But he also trains somebody and gives them new opportunity. People always want, you know, the American dream is to own your own business, and where else are you going to get the training and everything you need to run an operation, right? So
Let
me ask my second. Right. This is my second. Let's back up question. Most people who I meet think of franchising as fast food. What percentage of the industry is fast food?
Oh, it's probably about 30%.
So it's only 30%.
Right.
But most people on the street would think that the only thing that gets franchised is fast food.
Right. Correct.
Okay.
Correct. There's senior citizen homes nowadays, a lot of repair types, IT, there's a lot of areas.
Hmm. Interesting.
Because I don't think most people know that. I think fast food is about, well, sometimes they think of health and fitness.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of them also right now. So.
Yeah.
So you guys vet them. Obviously, there's excellent ones, I guess, and then ones that are less than excellent, and you guys help to discern, the good from the bad.
Right, and we believe our portfolio has all the good because, they interviewed the executive board, they mm-hmm. visited their headquarters, they visited their franchisees, so they made sure they did that due diligence so before they go in the portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
So you said there's 3,000 to 3,500 franchises in the country. In terms of the companies that you work with, what percentage or what number of that 3,000 is sort of in your, preferred portfolio?
Well,
roughly,
it's 70 over 3,000. That would be a small percentage.
Very percentage.
But
okay.
Industry-wise, we definitely cover every industry in the franchising.
Gotcha.
Excellent.
Gotcha.
Excellent. So, good. So go on, Richard. Go ahead.
So let me ask you a question. Because people think that fast food is the area. Is that a fast-growing area? Or is it in some of these other industries that people don't necessarily correlate franchising to that are actually the future of franchising?
Well, the fast food will always be a big part of it. And where I was in the sweet environment, the cold treats environment with yogurt and ice cream, that's always fast growing too because there's always a new competitor coming in, and I don't think it's going to stop. What you have to do is I try to consult with people. Don't catch the fad. The Raven fans, when I hear a franchise as Raven fans, which I got caught up in Cold Stone years ago, and Cold Stone was good in the early years, but you realize you start getting caught up in it. You think your franchise has such raving fans that all the other ones are going to go away. But no, competition will always be there. So now I would tell people if you really have a good one and people are knocking down your doors with offers, sell for the equity. Maybe don't wait to the end because then I hit a four-year recession that didn't make it easy.
Excellent. Well, great, Frank. We'll be right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life after these announcements. Stay tuned. All right, we're back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life with Richard Musio and our special guest, Frank Caparino, franchise expert. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Thank you.
You had a question.
So, Frank, this might be the same question. You wrote a book about franchises, but you also owned 8 Cold Stone creameries that you sold. What was behind your decision to sell them, or is that what the book is sort of about?
Well, the book does cover that, some of the areas that I ran into in the franchise disclosure document, and I'm trying to tell people why I say 24 ways to things to beware of before signing. I'm talking about signing the UFOC in those days, now called the FDD, Franchise Disclosure Document. And because you have to check out everything. And you could go to a lawyer, which you should. You should go to a franchise lawyer and check it out. But there's questions you can only get answered by talking to the existing franchisees, and that's what I also talk about.
But I review documents quite frequently for people because of the nature of the business that I'm in, and one of my challenges with franchises is you sign a franchise agreement, and let's say it's good for 5 years, just for example, and then it's up for renewal, and when it becomes up for renewal, the franchisor has at some point in that interim probably made it more restrictive for new franchises that came in behind you, you know, in years 2, 3, 4, and so on. And so then you're sort of stuck with a take it or leave it proposition with an agreement that's different than the thing you originally signed to be able to re-up. Am I being off base when I say that that frequently happens?
No, that's true, because I had a clause in my franchise disclosure document that said that if you get a new franchise to re-up your franchise agreement, it goes to the newest franchise agreement. And they always make them. They started out at an inch thick, and when it was all done, I got a DVD that had 588 pages.
Holy cow. And did your territory get shrunken, too? Because I've seen agreements where somebody has 10 miles radius, but then the franchisor changes it to 5, and then you come up for renewal, so now you're down to 5. And again, it's a take-it-or-leave-it proposition, and somebody's, you know, building just down the street from you or 5 miles away. Did that happen to you?
Yes. What I try to tell people is talk to myself or somebody like me before you sign a franchise disclosure document. And here's one of the points, because they give you nice terms like first right of refusal, and the new franchisee or the prospect gets all excited about that. I got control of my destiny. Well, you really don't, because if they say we're changing the territory in the new franchise document when you re-sign in 5 years or you buy a second or third one, now all of a sudden you have double your fixed cost, you have to employ a manager at each point, you can't give the touch feel with your customers like you did before. And the first right of refusal means you either open the other one 3 miles away, which you don't like, because
like you're competing with yourself.
Right, and a franchisor and a franchisee, their goals are always inversely proportional. Number one, you want your own independent business that's growing, and the franchisor is selling franchises. So you really want your territory locked in. You never want it to shrink. But mine did in some cases because the franchise was growing too fast.
Hmm. So how did yours changed in what sense? The miles got reduced?
Well,
radius?
For instance, I was the first one in Chula Vista for Cold Stone Creamery. And then all of a sudden, there was two, and then there was three. My first one was doing 560,000 gross sales. The second one went to 500, and the first one went back to 450. And the third one they forced me to open went to 300,000.
Wow.
So if you check that out on the front end of a franchise that you feel is good, and you talk to the franchisees, make sure you have a franchise lawyer look at your document that they cannot change the territory, and they cannot change what you pay for that territory going forward and the renewals, and then you're okay. But you got to just make sure it can't change.
Hmm. Well, there must be some franchises that are, let's say, less greedy or more business savvy or want to expand in an equitable way. And I guess that's why people have to get a hold of you, because I guess you know, this has been your life and you've analyzed all of this, right?
Right. When we say we vet franchises, that's what we do. We make sure that we look at the franchise disclosure documents. I don't personally, but we have our office does that. But I know a lot about franchise disclosure documents because I've been involved for so many years. And my job is to take the candidate, what they want, to the right franchisor, and then the franchisor discloses. For instance, item 19 in a franchise disclosure document is 23 standard items, every franchise disclosure document. Item 19 is the finance one, the gross sales, maybe the net profit. They all don't have to report exactly the same, but that's the one you want to know about.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
I'm sorry, what's item 19 again? Could you?
There's 23 items in any franchise disclosure document controlled by the FTC, everybody they got to have 23 items. And item 19 of that is the sales that the franchisor claims. Now, they might say, I'm only in the business 3 years, I don't have any claims yet. But after 5 years, they usually have claims, and they can average an area, or they can talk right down to a location if they want.
Okay. And do you look at the litigation history of a franchisor very closely?
Very important, too. That's in there. See how, if there's litigation on maybe vendors and products, that's a lot different than if it's against franchisees. So if you want to become a franchisee and there's a lot of litigation between the franchisor and the franchisees, maybe you should walk to another franchise. Hmm. It's 3,000. You got a lot to go look at.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, if there's 3,000, you have a lot of different opportunities to sift through. But, I guess that would make sense that litigation would sort of tip you off as to how aggressive a franchisor is.
Sure. And also, you know, look for the amount of locations and look how you know, many states they're in. Because you want to, I always wanted to get a franchise that had the branding, had the nationwide advertising. I mean, what else are you buying? You're buying the formula, but I tell you, once you have a franchise in 1 month, you feel like the expert because you know the formula. But so I think the branding and the footprint across the United States is important.
Is Subway franchise? Because there's
oh, yes. You know, I just read it. I didn't read the article. I scanned the headlines. I want to get it. It's in my email box where McDonald's is actually getting a little worried about Subway because they hit that 38,000 point. They almost are equal now.
Really?
Maybe they think Subway's going to start adding to their menu and put, you know, burgers. I don't know. I have to read the article, but...
So, Frank, question. You say you help people try to find the right fit based on what it is that they really want to accomplish with their life or the reasons why they want to own a business or a franchise. Can I ask the reason why you decided to go into the business or own 8 franchises?
It's kind of interesting. We look back, and I didn't make a mistake on owning a franchise because I enjoyed it, but I made a mistake on telling my wife to stop being an RN. You know?
Okay.
And that life would have been a lot easier. I talked her out of all the stress of being an RN, and she says, well... If you want, this is in 1997. If you want me to get out of that, then you buy me a Cold Stone Creamery. That's when it was the raving phase. So I bought one, and I was about 40 then, and that's the first time I got an SBA loan. All the other, I've been in business, my own business, for 26 years, and I never got a loan. So I said, wow, a franchise gets an SBA loan. So I said, I'll keep getting franchises until they stop giving me loans. That's how I built to 8.
Okay.
So maybe some of that was a bad move because 4 of them were great. The one in Coronado was the best I ever had.
Mm-hmm.
So, but sometimes you got to get a lot of them to pick the jewel in it. You can't just pick all the good locations, you know. So,
yeah.
That's funny, though. Stop being an RN if I get a Cold Stone Creamery.
Of course, he's always been your nurse, though, right, Frank?
Right.
Your personal nurse. So that's a good thing. So, but what about the confidential questionnaire? What's that all about?
Oh, on the CQ, first of all, we're going to do like that's dear to Richard's heart, right? We're going to ask them to fill out a balance sheet, right? And that's usually the when I first meet a candidate who's interested, I say, go fill out the CQ because, like in anything, in real estate or if you're an accountant and you're doing taxes. If you don't see the numbers, you can't even start. So I want to see their numbers, and then I'm going to ask them questions on the CQ. You know, why do you want to own a business and why now? How many hours do you want to work? Have you managed employees in the past in your position? Have you done a lot of outbound sales? And how long do you want to be in this business? Do you want to sell it? You're going to transfer it to your family after? So all these questions... But the number one thing I'm always asking about is I'm trying, like in any sales environment, to know their motivation and to get rid of preconceived notions. Mm-hmm. If somebody comes to me and says, I want just the Subway, I say, you have to go to the Subway website. And they say, why? You said you're in franchising. Because what happens is, if that's Subway is so in demand that there isn't any open and they get millions of demands from around the world.
So. Let's hold that thought, though, Frank. This is great stuff. We'll come right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life right after this. All right, we're back with the second half of It's Your Money and Your Life with Richard Musio and Frank Caparino. Over to you, Richard, to thank all of our terrific sponsors.
Thank you to all of our terrific sponsors, which are including and not limited to, actually. This is 100% of them. Our major sponsor, UBS, with Mr. Michael Coranta and Drew Freitas. Michael actually attended the Secret Knock event, so it was nice to see him there. One of the few financial people in the room, a room full of creative, artistic people. Well, what Mike and Drew for people is very similar, but they do it with money. Polito Epic CPAs, Paul Polito CPA and Don Epic CPA. Paul Polito CPA might win our basketball pool with 34 people. He's in the lead, but he didn't pick Louisville to win, so he's rooting for Wichita State next Saturday night to pull off another upset. Carl Sheeler with Business Valuations Limited. Best business valuation firm on the West Coast. Joel Gruskin and Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. Jason Kruger, CFO service with Signature Analytics, helping businesses make more money by understanding their finances better. Best estate planning attorney in town, Rich Gaines with Family Legacy Legal. He's going to be the guest at the end of April. Has a great event coming up, too, with the noted author, Ken Druck, PhD. So we'll be hearing more about that in a few weeks. And the best business bank in San Diego, Regents Bank, Steve Sefton, Sean Puckett, and the crew. Again, Regents Bank, Thank you to all of our sponsors, and you can find out lots more about our sponsors where, Joe?
Well, if they go on their computer or PDA or their smartphone, whatever, and go to iymoney.com, there's a sponsors tab, and all their information is right there, emails, phone numbers, everything else. And I also would like to give the email and contact information for our guest tonight, Frank Caparino, and you can find him at franchoice.com. His email is fcaparino, C-A-P-E-R-I-N-O, at franchoice.com. And if you need to know anything about franchising or getting into the business, he's the guy you need to talk with. So, and he's here tonight.
So Frank, who's going into owning franchises? Is it somebody who just wants one location and, you know, do that instead of having a regular job? Or are you seeing entrepreneurs who want to have 10, 15, 20 locations and actually have a, you know, a multi-scale business?
Well, yeah, it depends, again, just like in financial planning, on their net worth. And, yeah, some of them, when they see that I have some franchises that haven't even been sold in anywhere in California, they're trying to maybe buy San Diego or buy L.A. But, see, I'm not limited to this area. So some of those that I wanted to sell, I found out another franchise person sold it already. Mm. And so, but I can go to my contacts in New York and New Jersey. So I have the whole country. So I see people who have a high net worth who want to buy an area, and then and some of the franchises, they split half the franchise fee when they resell the area. So that's their business model. They'll never have a lot of employees. They just want to do the outbound sales and sell their territory and make half the franchise fee.
Now, you mentioned you just kept buying franchises as long as the SBA would make loans to you to buy franchises. Has the restrictions in the capital marketplace put a damper on the franchise business, or given that franchises continue to grow in terms of the options out there, has it not?
It depends if a franchise gets blacklisted or not, or it's on the hot list. But the SBA is definitely holding, from what I understand, very tight to their 25% down right now.
Okay.
When I was starting the 8, I started out the first couple where I needed 20%. They shaved maybe 5% off.
Mm-hmm.
And it had to be tied to your house. And then when I got 3 or 4, they start really liking me, and this was like in the early 2000s before the recession.
Right.
And they would cut it down to like 15%, and they even dropped my house off it, which was great. So, but now it's, they want the 25%, they want the collateralization, and on top of that, they want to see a revenue stream, another outside income. So this is a very good time, Richard, to answer your question. Of somebody who keeps their job, has the income flow, this is the best time to get an SBA if they have enough to put down.
Hmm.
Yeah, because I've seen people do this. They keep their main profession or job, but they also own a franchise or two, or maybe the other spouse works in it, or maybe they have kids who are 21 or 25 who, after college, haven't quite found their own opportunities, so they get active in the family business. And it seems to make sense. Oh. I mean, to do it that way, to me, at least it does to me.
It definitely does, because it gives you that option if you do get laid off, or you take an early retirement, or you just get tired of the politics you don't like playing, let's say, in your company. You can now move over to your business that you've matured by this time, the franchise.
So a question related to financing, because most franchises need to have a location unless they're actually a home-based business, and San Diego might be unique. What kind of challenges have you seen with regard to finding space and rents and so on? I know San Diego was through the roof in terms of rents, and then things came down in the recession. Now things are going back through the roof on rents. Are landlords typically a help in this process, or are they a hindrance?
Well, the landlords, it's amazing. You know, I just I have to be good to landlords, which I really don't feel it, to be honest. Let me tell you. What I found out, my landlords in San Diego, one I had in Claremont area was owned by the Ohio Teachers Retirement Fund.
Right, right.
So how do you touch and feel a landlord during the recession? Everybody who's not in business tells you, oh, they'll cut back. They wouldn't even listen to you. I would call through their website and come back to the same managing firm that was on the property, and they'd come visit me and say, hey, you want to talk to me? So I couldn't even talk to the Ohio Teachers Retirement Fund.
Right.
And one I owned in the Whole Foods in the UTC area, that shopping center where Whole Foods is, I had a Cold Stone in there. They were owned by a company in Sweden.
Wow.
So they kept jacking their rents up because they owned the whole a whole portfolio in the country, if not the world. You couldn't negotiate down. So during the recession, it was very difficult. Now you're coming out of the recession, and you ask the landlords for a deal to renew your lease, and they go, oh, I think the economy's coming back. I'm only giving you 3 years at a time. I'm not giving you another 10 years. So they always they're spreadsheet jockeys. I think they just sit there and run all the scenarios, but they're not really in business with you, the landlords. It's difficult.
Do any franchisers weigh in and help, try to help sometimes? Or
they do. They do, because if they're a national, that's another reason for having a franchise that's a national brand that has a good real estate department in that. When they get bigger, they start having departments from not only finance and marketing and so forth. They also have a real estate department. And sometimes they send the people out to help negotiate in your city. That's what you really need.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. And you know some good franchise lawyers, too, I would take it, huh, that you could help people out with?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Good. Richard.
So can I just tell you my one philosophical challenge that I have frequently with franchise? I guess you mentioned it. The franchisor and the franchisee are sort of competing against each other. I've never understood a model where the franchisor's motive is to have gross sales increase because they get a percentage of the gross. But I'm a financial guy. It would make more sense to me if people are truly in a collaborative partnership to be tied into the profits increasing.
Right.
And how do you walk your potential buyers through that dichotomy or potential conflict of interest?
Well, if they discuss it and we want to talk about it, I say, well, maybe you have to feel that if your gross revenue figure, if the franchisor is taking 6% of your gross sales, do you think that you're going to have 6% more business than if you were in your old mom pa store?
Right, right.
I mean, that's how you got to look at it. Are you going to increase that business that much at least? And most times you would feel you probably are if you have a well-known franchisor that has a good brand. When I used to walk around San Diego, I might have had some problems with Cold Stone. Not when the CEO, his name was Doug Ducey, he's now the treasurer of Arizona. Not when he was running it, because everybody in his office had the brand on their chest. Everybody wore a Cold Stone emblem. They were bought by a consolidator, and now a consolidator has 13 brands under one corporation. Now nobody wears the brand, and then it starts going downhill. But I have never said anybody I ran into in San Diego has never said anything bad about Cold Stone because the branding was solid.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to buy the brand, and I hope that brand will overcompensate the 6% that I pay for in the royalties. So,
Although that's always trying to predict the future, because you mentioned that where there is success in a particular industry, then there becomes competition.
Right, correct.
And if you get fat and happy because you were maybe the first in line and were the first to do a great job of branding, sometimes it's hard to reverse, negative performance when competition comes into play because you got a little bit lazy.
Well, Richard, that's where I say to my candidates, when you're starting the process and you get to the franchisor and he opens the key to talk to the franchisees, if you could talk to 20, advice 5, talk to 20. And start out with, how was the training? How was the ops manual? How was the training that they promised? And then slowly go into, the finances what you thought they were? You have to talk to the franchisee before you sign. Franchisees, and they will tell you the whole story.
It's due diligence, right?
Right.
You've got to
right.
do your investigation.
This is a really weird question, but what's the average age of somebody who wants to become a franchisee? I know there's no probably study, but in terms of the people, the prospects that you see?
21 to 60. They're right across
the board. So they're right across the board. Okay.
Yeah, so.
Are a lot of them coming out of other business opportunities, like laid off by a big corporation or just sick of the rat race? Or?
Yes, there's a lot of that. When I knew when I personally knew the 1,000 franchisees in Cold Stone, when it was kind of a real brotherhood and camaraderie, all of those people came from every walk of life.
Okay.
They gave up businesses, or they was coming out of college, or they went in with their parents, or it's their primary business. So, yes, they come from all different walks of life.
And the process usually takes how long from the time you meet a prospect to the time they might sign on the dotted line to own a franchise?
Could be 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay.
Wow, that's quick. Hey, thank you, Frank. Look, got to get his book, Buying a Franchise. It's on Amazon. Check
we got to take a break.
And we will take a break. We'll come right back with more. It's Your Money in Your Life right after this. All right, we are back riding into the last segment of It's Your Money in Your Life with franchise expert Frank Caparino with FranChoice.com and Richard Muccio, the main man of the hour. So what should we get into for the last segment here, Richard?
Well, the main man of the hour, well, I'm just kidding.
Is actually Frank.
It's Frank. I was going to say, it's not me. I don't know why you're saying it's me.
Force of habit, you know.
So, Frank, I have another interesting question that I've always wanted to know about franchises. Let's assume that you do sell food product or some other product. Are most franchisees locked into buying only from one supplier, that is to say the supplier that the franchisor mandates?
Yes.
again, the one I knew was in Cold Stone because they had the formula on the sweet cream, as we called
okay.
it, the butter fat that we made into the ice cream every day. And it actually was, I had to buy that through Sysco because they're controlling the dairies and they're controlling the routes, and they said it wasn't cost effective to have two companies. I didn't always love that because of the fact then Sysco kind of has monopolistic treatment, I think. But they did allow us to buy all our other products wherever else we can buy and be the fudges and the mixes and all the mix-ins. We just had to buy the sweet cream through one vendor. And most franchises do that, but how they handle any, if they get any bonuses or rebates, that's which makes a good franchisor from a bad one. And that's something I teach my franchisees or prospects to vet out and check on.
Yeah, can you explain that, the difference? I mean, like, what is a rebate, and how might that benefit a franchisee?
Well, for instance, we never go to a restaurant that has Coke or Pepsi, correct?
Right.
Because they're always competing, and that means their biggest marketplace are restaurants and so forth. So that's an easy sneer to talk about Coke and Pepsi. Coke and Pepsi is going to probably offer a rebate to the Subways of the world that are huge, or somebody, or even the smaller chains, on, okay, maybe I'll give you a certain percentage back if you lock in my brand in your franchise. Mm-hmm. So now, if it's a great franchise that you vetted out about that, they will take that money and they will be honest and transparent about it and say, we'll either give it back to the franchisees or we will put it into the franchisees' co-ops, meaning the San Diego co-op or the LA co-op, to use in marketing in the local area. So the money will come back. If it's a franchise that you find out is not giving back that money, then and just leaving it in their coffers, it shows up on your audit sheets every time you look at a UFOC. You can't see where the money comes from, but it says how much money was made from royalties, how much money was made from licensing, how much money was made from other products. So I teach people to also make sure you vet that out and you check on if you're getting the fees back from the vendors.
Makes sense. So speaking of licensing, should franchisees also be concerned about making sure they understand how solid trademarks and copyrights and the like are with regard to franchises that have these things?
Yes. Thank God it hasn't happened to me, but I've heard of some books I've read on franchising where people bought a franchise because of their branding and their copyrights and their trademarks or their service marks, and then they found out that they weren't even certified to use them. They didn't even go through the whole process. So that's where your franchise lawyer, make sure he not only looks at your FDD, make sure he checks that the copyrights, the trademarks, the service marks are real and filed.
Hmm. You really have to do your homework, huh? You have research. So.
Well, that's what we're here for, to help you do that.
And you know what, Frank? The cool thing is, if anyone out there is listening, who's interested in knowing more about franchising, becoming a franchisee, et cetera, your fee is nothing to them, right? I mean, you get paid by the franchisor, so you're basically the consultancy is free, correct?
Correct.
So how many people do you work with at a given time? I mean, how many people can you represent? Hundreds, or are you just typically working with two or three people
about,
at a time?
About 10 at a time, because they're at different different parts of the system. You know, we got from the front end to almost signing the franchise disclosure document.
Sure.
And yeah. I spent at least 5 hours just in the consultancy phase, and then we go back and forth with the franchisor to answer any questions, and they call it, it's a weird term, frickin' frack, between the franchisor, me, and the candidate. Make sure everybody's questions get answered.
So are you then independently of actually having specific customers constantly vetting new opportunities just so you can have the highest quality in your arsenal, so to speak?
Yes, they are. And I don't do it. Like I said, the four people in Eden Prairie do it, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And then we have launch calls every couple months when a new franchisor comes on board. Or if we're losing one, that'll also come out. But usually we're putting more than we're losing, you know, so.
Interesting story. The Big Mac was actually developed by one of the franchisees on the East Coast, right?
Right.
And, and that became a big success.
And the whole breakfast menu, too. They're both out of Pennsylvania, from what I understand. Yeah, you're right.
So I know he had to bring it to headquarters and had to go through all his vetting and whatnot, but worked out, I guess.
Here's another thing to check. If you're going to be a franchisee, remember that if you were an independent person before, you have to follow the system. Joe mentioned McDonald's. They always said their best franchisees were in the Midwest because on the East Coast and West Coast, people try to change things.
Right.
So you follow the formulas you got, and that's how it works. And if you want to make sure that you don't deviate from the menu, because that affects your whole franchises, you know, as a whole. So.
But are most franchisors open to new ideas from their franchisees, or is that something difficult to sort of push through?
No, that's how Cold Stone got cake batter ice cream. Right?
Really?
Somebody just decided to put a box of cake batter in the ice cream while they were making it, and they said, oh, that tastes great. And then see, you have to go to the franchisor and make sure that the product, you know, doesn't have to be cooked. It could be used right out of the box. You don't want anybody getting hurt, right?
So yeah, of course.
Yeah, right.
Well, you've got to reward innovation, though. I mean, the Post-it notes for 3M, I don't know what it has to do with franchising, but that was, a mistake, basically, and someone, discovered this adhesive that didn't stick quite as well as a piece of tape and became the Post-it note, and right. Voila. So, anyway, with that, we have to...
Boy, time flies.
You don't have to stick around anymore, Frank, because we are...
Anyway, we're selling franchises of the show all across... Yeah. Oh, I'm just kidding. We're right. not. We're
Frank,
not,
thanks so much for being our guest. Get his book, Buying a Franchise. Get a hold of Frank at franchise.com. Frank Camparino, thank you so much for being our guest. Richard, you have a great week. Justin Hart, thank you for being our board op tonight. Thank you to Craig Blank, our con executive, and Dave Sniff, our programming genius. You have a great week. Happy Easter. Happy Passover. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Richard and Joe. Appreciate
our pleasure. Our pleasure. Good night.